Amanir. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I thought you were having a nap between adverts, Mullah.
Yeah, I always do. It's Friday morning. It's been a long week, man.
Yeah.
Show some understanding.
Yeah,
I know you're up early in the morning, busy flexing your thumbs on those WhatsApp groups, responding in detail to different political arguments. It looks like your thumbs go to gym early in the morning.
Not at all, Maulana. Not at all. I got my skateboard and helmet ready.
Okay. Let's get into it then. Story that caught your eye this week.
You know, Maulana, last week I told you that my son Ozair's car was stolen. It hasn't been recovered yet. But I came across an amazing story, which I read in the British Telegraph newspaper. And it's about a stolen car right here in good old Mzansi, South Africa. Derek Hulson had his Toyota Corolla stolen. And police found the car and traced it back to him, and he went over and collected his car. What a happy ending, eh? Aren't you happy to hear this good news story, dear listeners? What was that? You are wondering what I'm smoking and what's so amazing about the story. Okay, right. It's true, I did leave out a few tiny details here and there. The Toyota Corolla was stolen 22 years ago. And here's the article from the Telegraph newspaper. A South African man has been reunited with his first car, which was recovered 150 miles away in mint condition, 22 years after it was stolen from the capital, Pretoria. Derek Huerson's Toyota Corolla 1.6 GL was stopped by police at a roadblock in the northern province of Limpopo last November, with the chassis and registration numbers scratched off. Police were initially at a loss as to how to find its owner. But one, a warrant officer, Kwakwa Ntokola, persevered, having the car worked on at the pound for several months until they found the original identification numbers hidden in the bodywork. Trawling through the old police records, he found the original theft report and contacted its owner in Centurion, 150 miles away. Mr. Hoerson said he was dumbfounded to finally get word of his beloved first car. He said, "I received a call from Officer Ntokola from the Vehicle Theft Unit to ask if I was driving such a car back then. All memories came back, and we started the process of fetching the car." People can't believe it, If a car is stolen a year ago, you go to the police pound and you find a skeleton there. But this car was very well looked after. It's still in mint condition. Mr. Hoerson was just 23 years old when his car was stolen. So, what's he, 45 years old, and he's got his Toyota Corolla back again and in mint condition. I remember a story from way back, incidentally, where a woman's car was stolen. Old lady, her car was stolen. I think she had a Conquest or something. Oh, a battered-up old Conquest. And smooth tires and dents all over the place. And when police found the car a year later, it had a new spray job done, new tires. The engine was in top condition. So she was very happy indeed. Now, and the second story still continues with the theme of stolen cars, Maulana. A 20-year-old Mampara by the name of Kenzo Roberts was arrested in Florida in the good old U.S. of A. for stealing a 2015 Mercedes-Benz. So there he was in the back seat of the police car. The back seat, the whole area in the back is fortified like a cage so that the person they locked up in there doesn't escape. There's also a camera pointing to this person in the back seat. Now, let me tell you what happens after you are arrested. Sorry, this is the normal procedure. You get taken to the police station where your fingerprints are taken and then they are matched to see if you are wanted for any other crime. That's normal procedure. Well, our man, Kenzo, knew this. So while he was being taken to the police station, this Laddu decided to take steps to prevent police from identifying him via his fingerprints. What did he do? He began chewing at the tips of his fingers to get rid of his fingertips. The video camera recorded him that he was scratching his fingers against the metal of the cage and also swallowing bits of skin. Yeah, Well, the sad story is that his attempts to destroy his fingerprints failed because the scanners at the police station picked up his fingerprints and linked him to two crimes of assault with a deadly weapon. He now also faces charges of possessing a concealed gun, having fake identification, and possessing stolen credit cards. And so, dear listeners, since it's been a very quiet week with no other candidates, we can unanimously declare Kenzo Roberts the undisputed Hulu of the week.
Mm. Yesterday there was action in Parliament once again, and people were reminded about the character that we have in our country, Julius Malema. The U.S. have their own Malema. His name is Donald Trump, and he's featuring in a big way in the quest to become the next president of the United States. What's happening in the U.S. elections?
You know, there's an old expression, it is better to keep your mouth closed and let people think you are a fool than to remove it, than to open it and remove all doubt, right? George Bush tried not to speak too much, and he sounded brilliant when he read from speeches prepared for him by his staff. But when there was a press conference and he had to speak and answer questions off the cuff, then the level of his stupidity shone through very brightly. By contrast, we have a cartoon character who wants to be president of the United States. Yes, folks, Donald Duck, Trump. Trump and Bush are, of course, supreme idiots. But while Georgie was nervous to speak, Trump cannot be stopped at all. He suffers from a chronic case of verbal diarrhea. Hmm. He talks and talks and talks, no holds barred. He says that he speaks his mind. Speaks his mind. He hasn't got one. He says that he doesn't believe in being politically correct. Dear listeners, George Bush was an idiot who gave me wonderful material every week for this program, and I'm eternally grateful to him for this. But I like this guy, Donald Duck. He is such a clown. He is, of course, from the Republican Party, and another Republican, Lindsey Graham, called Donald Trump a jackass. And Americans love him, too. In fact, he is the leading candidate for the Republican Party. All the polls show that he is way ahead. He's leading the race for president. Donald Trump, of course, is a billionaire. He's a big man, big size, and he has a big mouth. He doesn't shy away from insulting people. And he has been famous for a long time as a property owner. He owns a whole lot of high-class hotels, and he is the boss of the Miss Universe beauty contest. And, of course, the boss of the famous TV program, The Apprentice. So he's a well-known personality and larger than life. So his opponents are a little scared of him. And ordinary people love him for being a straight talker and something of a buffoon, a clown. The least that can be said about Donald Trump is that he is entertaining. Now, we have, as you said, our own Donald Trump right here.
Mm.
Well, he has matured quite a bit, you know, since those early days. But in those early days, politicians were scared of him, if you remember.
Mm.
And, of course, you mentioned his name, is our very own Julius Malema. I remember those days when he was ready to kill for Zuma. He was very, very entertaining, straight talking, entertaining with his off-the-cuff comments. He always we always wondered what he was going to say next. And people flocked to see him wherever. He was like a celebrity, even though he said some very, very rude and sometimes very silly things, very crude stuff also. I also used to make fun of him. He featured regularly in the light at the end of the tunnel spot here on the radio. And if you remember, some people from his political party at that time in Indonesia got very cross and sent a very angry letter to Radio Islam saying that I was something of a racist to pick on Malema. That was quite funny. And after he decided not to kill Zuma anymore, not to kill for Zuma anymore, that party began making fun of him themselves. But just a final word about Malema. You know, as I said, Malema has matured a great deal over the past few years since he left and formed his own party. And I'm going to say something that may raise a few eyebrows. I listened to Malema very closely on many, many phone-in programs where he was the guest. The best thing that I can, the best way that I can describe him is formidable. Yes, the man is very, very articulate, very clear in the way he expresses himself. Tough questions are thrown at him, and he hits them for six. And I say without hesitation, he is really brilliant in the way he answers questions. yes, I use the word brilliant. He doesn't speak like a politician, doesn't waffle, doesn't give you a whole lot of words, and doesn't answer the question. He is unflappable, meaning that he's cool no matter how tough the questions are, and his answers are always crystal clear. Can you believe what I'm saying, Maulana?
Mm.
Crystal clear. Does he seem, does it seem to you, dear listeners, that I am impressed with Malema? Well, yes, I am. Like him or hate him, there is no doubt Malema is formidable. Now, back to the U.S. elections. Donald Trump is, in his early days, as I said, he was Malema, or shall I put it another way? Donald Trump today is what Malema used to be in those days. Entertaining, but a little bit empty-headed. Last night, seven Republican candidates appeared in a Fox News TV debate. Donald trumped them all. He took the center stage. He said something quite remarkable. Well, he said something quite silly all along, but he said something quite remarkable. When all of them, all the seven candidates were asked the question, if one person won the nomination for the Republican Party, in other words, if the Republican Party chose one of you to go forward on behalf of the Republican Party to stand against the Democrats, will any one of you who lost give the winner full support, or would you leave the party and stand as an independent candidate for the elections to be the next president? Well, obviously the answer to that question is usually quite simple. No one will say that they will leave the party. That would mean that, you know, you are disloyal to the party. Guess what? When the question was asked, only one person raised his hand, and that was Donald Trump. Right there in public, before millions of Americans, he confirmed that he would leave the party and stand against the person nominated by the Republican Party. In effect, he will split the voters of the Republican Party, and thereby, and therefore, giving the Democrats a greater choice, a greater power for their candidate becoming president. And of course, at this stage, it looks like Hillary Clinton would be the choice for the Democrats, but one can never say for certain. So there you are, Donald Trump saying something quite outrageous, and remarkably, the polls will still show him as leading the race. Donald Trump, the jackass, could still be the nominee for the Republicans. And one more thing. One more thing, Molina, this is very important. He made a very important promise recently, should he be elected president of the United States. What was his promise? No, it wasn't about creating more jobs. It wasn't about making the United States more secure. He didn't promise to make health care more affordable. No, dear listeners, Donald Trump promised that if he became president of the United States, he will have a haircut. Seriously.
Yeah, another man who came from nowhere to win the U.S. presidential election some years ago was Barack Obama. How's he doing?
Well, Obama has another 17 months to go before he leaves the White House. As we know, a person is only allowed to be president for 2 4-year terms. So after 17 months, Obama's 8-year term will be over, or 8 years in the office will be over. Well, in his last 4 years as president, Obama has been very bold. He has been boldly moving forward. It's very difficult for a U.S. president to actually move forward with his own policy and his own ideas, because the U.S. Congress can sabotage it, as we all know. And the worst thing for Obama is that the opposition, that is the Republican Party, is in the majority in the U.S. Congress. But Obama, as I said, has certain very strong ideas, certain things that he has to do, and he has pushed forward with them, regardless of the Republican-dominated Congress. Just this week, he made a very big speech, a very important speech about global warming and the environment. The Republican Party, known as the Party of Big Business, is generally against cutting down on pollution emitted by factories, and also rejects the idea that industry should stop using coal-fired generators to generate power to run these factories. Now, changing to cleaner energy is very costly, and so big business is against it. Obama, in his speech, committed the United States to cut pollution by 90% over the next few decades. Can you believe it? He has committed and spoke very strongly, and generally the subject of global warming and the environment is avoided by the major powers, because it means that in some ways the economy would suffer because the cost would be... Anyway, his speech was exactly what environmentalists have been saying for years and years, and what big business was always opposed to. So that was a big move, and immediately, as expected, the condemnations came fast and furiously from the Republican Party. The other big move by Obama recently was to restore relations with Cuba, which the U.S. broke off in 1961. Obama realized that this Cold War was senseless, and so in spite of objections from the Republicans, he moved forward. But his biggest move was tackling the Iran issue. He realized that the United States could no longer get the whole world to continue with the sanctions. So over the past few years, he moved forward. The outcry from the Israeli-controlled Congress was huge, but Obama pushed forward, and in the end, he was successful. But the U.S.-Israeli conflict is not over. It's actually heating up. This week, Netanyahu spoke directly via TV to millions of Jewish Americans, telling them to stop this deal. Obama followed up with some straight talk. He said that every country in the world, this is so important, he said that every country in the world supports the deal with Iran, except for one country, Israel. Wow, Maulana. He singled out Israel as the bad guy, as being out of step with the rest of the world. That, dear listeners, no president in the past would ever have dreamt of saying. But as I said, the U.S.-Israeli war is not over yet. Billions are being poured into making Americans change their minds. TV adverts, billboards, politicians paid to oppose the deal. And you know what? It seems to be working. A recent poll showed that support for the Iran deal among Americans has dropped from 52% to 46%. Money can change minds. But the reality is that it doesn't really matter what Americans decide. Here's the Guardian what the Guardian newspaper said this week. It says here, as debate rages among politicians and pundits in Washington over whether to endorse last month's historic nuclear compromise with Iran, key European allies have already given their verdict, a resounding thumbs up. Government ministers and business leaders in France, Germany, Italy, and elsewhere in the EU are racing to open up a new era of diplomatic, trade investment, and possible future military cooperation with Tehran, regardless of what America and Israeli skeptics say. While Americans argue over timescales, technicalities, and Iranian trustworthiness, behind their backs, the scramble for Persia, recalling Europe's 19th century scramble for Africa, has already begun. The cohesion of the international sanctions regime isolating Iran is crumbling by the day. Okay, one last word about the good old US of A. Now, we have been hearing for a long time about the rising tide of Islamophobia in the United States. Muslims are being demonized and targeted. It's getting worse. Many states have passed laws which blocked the possible application of Sharia law in the U.S. Constitution. Can you believe that, eh? People, that is leading politicians, are saying that Muslims are trying very hard to inject Sharia law into the U.S. legal system. So they've passed laws, many states have passed laws against this. Recently, there's been a new phenomenon, Maulana, new phenomenon, something very troublesome as well as shocking in this land that boasts freedom, democracy, human rights, and all of that. Many businesses all over the U.S. have put up signs which say, this is a Muslim-free zone. Can you believe it, eh? This is a Muslim-free zone. Of course, many in the U.S. have spoken up against this nonsense. One of them is the Presbyterian Church, which just released a statement. Let me read just quickly out of some part of it. It says, one of the latest manifestations of fear is the creation of Muslim-free zones by business owners in several states, including Kentucky, Florida, Arkansas, and New Hampshire. One gun store owner in New York marked his shop a Muslim-free gun store. In defense of his decision, he told the TV channel in Albany, New York, my Facebook post, I thought about this and said, well, there is only one organization that is advocating for the killing of Americans, trying to get local homegrown terrorists and somewhat succeeding. They're not Canadians, they're not French, they're Muslims. The creation of a Muslim-free zone and the rhetoric of fear that accompanies them clearly stereotypes, this is what the Presbyterian Church says, clearly stereotypes and punishes all Muslims on the basis of actions of a very small minority of the Muslim population. As Presbyterians, we have consistently affirmed the provision of the 1964 Civil Rights Act that makes it a crime for any place of public accommodation to deny service to anyone based on religion, race, color, or national origin. Moreover, with respect to our relationships with people of other faiths, we have made every effort to nurture our relations with Muslims, Jews, Sikhs, and others whose faith traditions are not our own. So, there you are, Maulana. Muslim-free zone. It's almost like putting up a sign saying, this restaurant is guaranteed to be cockroach-free. If this kind of insult was directed at any other religion, there would have been immediate uproar, and perhaps people will be arrested for hate crimes, and there will be huge demonstrations all over the United States, and people will be carrying posters with words like Je suis Buddhist or Je suis Hindu or Jewish or whatever. But Muslim bashing is now a new national pastime.
Palestine.
Netanyahu said that the attackers who killed the baby with a firebomb are terrorists. So here is the question, dear listeners. Netanyahu killed over 500 children when he attacked Gaza a year ago. What does that make him? Right. The settlers are a law unto themselves, mainly because the law does not act against them. Let me read this to you. It says here, a report in May by Yesh Din, an Israeli group that provides legal assistance to Palestinians, looked at the fate of some 1,000 complaints filed with the Israeli police over alleged violence by settlers between 2005 and 2014. The study found that more than 91% of investigations were closed without charges being filed. Only about 7% of investigations led to charges being filed. But for cases that do end up in court, almost 23% of charges are dropped or thrown out, while nearly a quarter of trials end with guilty verdicts, but a decision not to convict the defendant. Can you imagine 7%, 23% of the 7% were charged, where the charges are dropped. And just to show you about how people are inspired to hate by statements of leading religious figures. Here's what I read yesterday in the Jerusalem Post. Rabbi Benzi Gopstein, the extremist leader of the radical Lehava anti-assimilation and anti-missionary organization, said that he would support the burning of churches. He said this on a panel discussion on Tuesday about idol worship. Well, since the burning to death of that baby, settler violence against Palestinians has actually increased, Maulana. But of course, you won't read about it in the mainstream newspapers, anywhere on TV or radio. It's because settler violence has been regarded for a long time as normal, and therefore very boring, and therefore not newsworthy. But if you want to know what's really happening, as I said many times before, go to Ma'an News, M-A-A-N, Google it, and you will see the terrorism that Palestinians have to suffer every single day.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
You know, at a cafeteria here in Durban, at a Catholic school cafeteria, where they provide food to the kids, a nun placed a note in front of a stack of apples. The note said, "Take only one apple. Take only one apple. God is watching." And further down the line, there's a big pile of donuts. And one clever boy, Siva, wrote his own note and placed it in front of the donuts. "Take as much as you like. God is watching the apples." One more for you, Maulana. You know, when people are caught speeding, they give some hell of excuses. They are rushing to the hospital to see someone there, or rushing to the airport or something like that. And George from Port Shepstone was driving to Durban in his Golf GTI. He passed a speed trap at 140, but didn't stop. When the cop waved at him to do so, the cop gave chase, and Georgie started speeding. The cop kept up with him. They were doing 170, then 180, then 200, and the cop kept on his tail. And George decided that he had to give up, so he stopped. The cop came over to him and said, "Hey, boss, listen, you are speeding, eh? You're going so fast, but I will tell you something. I had a very long day. I'm very tired. My shift is nearly over, so if you give me a good excuse, I will let you go." And Georgie thought for a moment and said, "My friend, let me tell you why I was speeding. Last week, my wife ran away with a cop. I thought maybe you might be the officer trying to give her back to me." Traffic cop said, "Hey, boss, have a nice day. Okay, bye-bye."
Uncle Abe, as always, jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated.
Always a pleasure, Maulana.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
16 minutes to 9, that was this week's edition of the Big Picture program with Abe Dowjee.